Live, we are here on a Thursday evening this time, and a Mass Chat Live is a live experience. It's responsive, so we're streaming right now on Twitter, Facebook, on YouTube, so whichever channel you're on, please do reply with thoughts and questions. This is it's really your show. What I'm trying to do here is get people involved live and responsive on Twitter, Facebook, etc., and on here as well. So yeah, very, very excited to do the first ever A-level themed Mass Chat Live. For the first one, we thought we'll just keep it fairly general, and then with the later ones we can look at specialist areas, be that modules or further maths, etc. Yeah, we'll go straight into it. I'll just introduce ourselves very quickly. I'll introduce myself, Matul, and I teach online. I teach everything from primary to A-level maths. And I'm based in London. So over to you. I'll just call your names out, and the way I see you, over to you, Davina.
I'm Davina. I teach maths, GCSE and A-level, at secondary school, based in London as well, and I've created content on Jethro Maths.
Fantastic. And Matthew?
Yep, I'm Matthew, or Matt Manus, we call it. I teach GCSE and A-level, teaching A-level for about 5 years. I happen to work with Mel and Chris, so if you're here, Just Maths team, hello. Favourite topic, it's got to be stuff from WISPs, from Johnny Griffiths. Absolutely brilliant task. There's one I remember that is sequences and simultaneous equations. Absolutely brilliant task, especially to prepare for a transition.
Brilliant. And your second appearance on Mass Chat Live, so congratulations on the second one.
Thank you.
Great. Yeah, and we're also so yeah, you can also say what your favorite topic is in teaching A-level maths. So we'll come back to you, Davina, and so over to you, Simon.
Hi, I'm Simon. I teach in a sixth form college in Manchester that I cannot name on social media because I signed a contract, and I teach GCSE. I teach A-level maths, and yeah, I sometimes tweet at Bawley0. Now, my favorite topic, there are quite a few. It's mainly the ones that I've sort of repaired since I became a teacher, the things I didn't understand as a student and suddenly sort of clicked with when I became a teacher. So the top one of those is parametric equations, where, bless my teacher and her cotton socks, he never said to me that it's a completely different system, where instead of finding it, you know, picking an X to get a Y, you pick a third thing that gives you both. So I now make sure that I explain this as thoroughly as possible to students. Also, like trig equations, which I'm constantly revising and changing how to teach. So, one day I'll get it right, but that'll probably be about a week before retirement.
Brilliant. Over to you, Rob.
Hello, everyone. So my name is Rob Southern. I teach at an 11 to 18 school in Salisbury. So I teach quite a bit of maths and further maths. I've previously been a Key Stage 5 coordinator. And I've also got a YouTube channel called Maths in an Empty Classroom. In terms of favourite topic, we were talking about this before we came on air. And I mean, for me, it's literally just what I'm doing now. It's what I'm doing tomorrow. I just love all of it. But for me, anything that you can find links between different areas of mathematics. So recently I was teaching the mechanics unit on non-constant acceleration. And I just absolutely love that, because you can make so many links, obviously, with the pure element of calculus. You talk about how the value of an integral is the same as displacement, whereas the area between the curve and the axis is the same as distance traveled. And just having the ability to make those links is really, really great. And I think that's a real strength of the new A-level, is that it's forced us in a way to make those links more explicitly for students, where it's not so modular anymore. So that's my thing.
Love that. Yeah. Finally, onto you, Sheena.
My name's Sheena Flowers. I'm head of maths at a school in Peterborough. I teach A-level and further maths mainly this year. And my favourite topics, you see, Simon's made me think now because I've got in my head what I was going to say and now I'm thinking, oh, trig. I love differential equations and second order differential equations, not springs. I don't like springs. A bit too mechanics-y for me. But I do also love playing around with trig identities and, you know, the fact that you can start off and go down some kind of weird rabbit hole and then it all kind of fixes itself and works out in the end. And then somebody comes along and says, well, why don't you just do that to start with and does it really efficiently, which I just love that. But second order differential equations, I love teaching that. And at further maths, I like teaching Dimorphos theorem and the with sequences and things like that, where it all ends up in a complete mess and then ends up just cancelling out and looking lovely. That's a great topic to teach as well. So yeah, those things.
Fantastic. I'll just go back to you and myself, Duino. We forgot to mention our favourite topic, so I can go for yours. Yeah.
Well, I know Sheena hates it, but it's going to be mechanics. The engineer in me just loves mechanics. I love that they're confused to begin with, and then they kind of get it, and you think they've got it, and then they just haven't got it at all, and it takes a few more lessons. But eventually they do it, and it's just like, this is just such a nice little system most of the time to work with. So mechanics for sure.
Well, you basically answered my question. I'm also an engineer, mechanical engineer. And yeah, mechanics has got to be it. Yeah, I mean, the thing with mechanics is it's a practical applied thing. And when you abstract it out too much and don't connect with the reality of it, like pulleys, for me, just... I really understood pulleys in the first year of my mechanical engineering degree because I realized actually there is an equation which A-level students can perfectly understand. It's called the belt friction equation or capstan equation, and like the amount of friction that changes depending on how much you wrapped it up is E to the something, and you can do that. So the real pulleys does have friction, and you wouldn't so one of my first things is just to say actually in reality you would never have a pulley like this or a light inextensible strings. Real strings are not like that. And I just kind of like to bring things about and I can model them with my hands and things. I'm very, very hands-on. It's the sort of thing I do with younger years as well. Teach with manipulatives and real objects because we do live in a concrete world and we need to connect with the concrete world first before we can abstract it out. Yeah, Tayoub's. Thanks, Tayoub. Mechanics is the only correct answer here, right?
Too many assumptions. It's just, yeah, you said this only will work, but then if it's light and inextensible, there's no air resistance. It just, that's what I don't like about it. There's too many assumptions.
In the interest of just bringing in stats, I do also love introducing hypothesis testing.
Oh, yes.
To yeah. Students.
I would really do that.
It is great fun. I give them all a multiple choice quiz with no questions, just answers. And they just have to choose A, B, C, D. And they're all looking and going, and then you go through and they all get like 2 or 3 out of 10. And then one kid gets 7 because I've told them before the lesson what the answers were. And then obviously everyone shouts, cheat, cheat, cheat. And then we work out, you know, well, what's the probability of that happening? It's about 1%. Okay, well, will they cheat? Yeah, Mr. Southern gave me the answers before the lesson. Should probably say, not my idea, got it from an AMSP course and tweaked it slightly, but it's really, really nice way to introduce it.
Genius.
Yeah,
it's such a nice, it's a really practical area. I've had introduced that to students, and stats is not my thing. I'll be honest, I did my M1 and M2 to avoid stats, and then I went to my degree, and then batch manufacturing, you've got to do stats. It's like busted. I had to learn the stats. But it is, yeah. I mean, it's really interesting, and yeah, it's all really interesting.
Applications again, isn't it? With the hypothesis testing, there's a lot of stuff at the minute with the medical things and vaccines and stuff that you can use as well, and probabilities, which is great. Lots of real life data flying about at the moment for exponential functions as well.
Yeah, and I've seen those questions on pandemic modeling as well. I've seen like some old ones on EdXL where you had this kind of sinusoidal decaying thing, bringing your differential equations are essentially the thing of beauty. That's what we're really building towards, I think, because you use them so many in so many ways, and kind of linking that up to the engineer thing, you can't solve most differential equations, so you kind of attack them in a heavy-handed way using numerical methods, and Newton wraps, and that's also a really nice area for me in the pure bit, where you see like things like the trapezium rule for integration as a heavy-handed way of trying to solve it, and then the exact way, where there's not enough of that in the GCSE. There's an exact way of doing it, mm-hmm. and then there's this kind of numerical way of doing it in the practical world.
And then showing students that actually when you've got a calculator, it's not actually integrating stuff, it's using a numerical method and just using a really thin strips to get your answer, because it's not clever enough to actually integrate a lot of function.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant. So one of the things about these Math Chat Lives is not all of us have met together, so it's a nice way of bringing people together from different parts of the country, from parts of the world, in different departments. So it's a sort of like an interdepartmental meeting in some ways, but very public, which is a good thing, because people are on Twitter and they can see that, and they can get ideas and ping their own questions and reflections. We'll discuss some of the more imminent things. Assessment is the main one at the moment, and I just want to get a gauge of how that's going for you. Maybe even link it up with well-being, if it is quite intense. How is this year different to last year, and how are those 2 years different to all years? Maybe you've got your own perspective, Sheena, as a head of maths.
Obviously, last year we had a lot of data on those students, so looking at their the grades and stuff, we had a lot of information, and this year we've got a lot less, because it kind of, the lockdown interfered with mock exams and things like that, and having to assess students when there's very, very little out there in terms of questions is really, really difficult. I've actually produced some kind of shadow papers with mixed questions and things, which has taken a long time to kind of put together, but though all the papers are out there with students, which has made things very difficult, because with the new specification, you've only got 2018, 2019 and 2020 really that you can use. And that's basically, we've all turned ourselves into little exam hubs, haven't we? Trying to do all these assessments and get the evidence that we need, and being able to justify all of our decisions, whilst actually, because of the changes to the A-level fairly recently, we've got very little data. If we were on the old spec, we would have tons of stuff to draw on and tons of past papers and questions, and we'd know how to kind of make our own and things like that. But with the new specification, I don't think a lot of the types of questions that we could be asking the students have even come out of it yet. So we wouldn't even, if we created those kinds of questions, we wouldn't know how to mark them. It's just made things very tricky for us, and stressful for the students as well, because they're trying to do their best too. But we want to reassure them that, you know, we'll do everything right by them. But at the same time, we haven't got the backup and the help that we need to be able to come up with those decisions, really. And marking workload is huge.
Yeah, I think if you add that to GCSE as well, so I think we just had a CPD session on just tags, CAGs, whatever you call them, tag your it, that kind of thing.
We've avoided using the term tag, because it just puts that onus on that it's your team that's giving you it, and it's not helpful.
It comes all about you,
So in terms of where I am, I mean, I moved schools in September, so it's a bit hard from the school where I'm at. It's gone through a massive sort of journey. Last year's year 13, there was only three people that did it. This year's six. This year's year 12, 12 people. We might have lots more people coming in for New Year 12. I think we might have 24, literally like doubling every year. But for us, because we've got such a small cohort, for us, it's more of a case of, it's like a shadow paper. So we're planning to do sort of like two assessments, roughly consisting of a pure paper and a stats and mechanics paper. That's what we'll do. And then I think what most of you are doing, we just cut Evansoft out. We haven't really covered during COVID, or for us as an excuse. because we want to give the pupils, you know, we want to give the pupils a positive experience. So, but obviously we want to make sure the questions are challenging enough that it constitutes an exam paper. So we've agreed to, let's say for stats, we've agreed to move any questions we're moving involving a large data set, because it's just, well.
That was an easy cut though, I think.
It was such an easy cut, like anything with large data set,
With AQA as well, with them changing the large data set, again, the amount of questions that you've got are very minimal. It was that was an easy decision to make.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, cut off the easy topics and then but ensuring that is long enough. So I think for us we're you know, I saw this too, I think it was Michael Rosen, wasn't it? Or quite a few people saying like, well, it's exams, but it's not exams, it's assessment, but it's not assessment, it's exams and all that. Because we're still getting them to sit exams in, you know, in the sports hall. They're still doing it. It's just a shorter period of time. And in some ways, I think we probably agree that in some ways it's probably even more stressful for us in terms of our well-being. Because we're like, well, we're now turned into exam creators and exam markers and exam moderators, like, and
to then be told that we've got to have 48 hours notice of, you know, we're going to be told which students' work that they want and we've got to provide it so that they can check it. It's just putting even more stress on top of everyone. We're marking it, I mean, you know, we're producing it, we're marking it, we're trying to use the grade descriptors maybe, which is just ridiculous. And then at the end of all of that, we're being told, well, if this doesn't look right or whatever, then we're going to come and investigate and things. You know, we're trying to do our best here with very little information. It's very hard.
And it feels like more stress than last year as well. Like last year, they kind of left you to it. And, you know, we put these results out, which we thought, all right, they use their algorithm, and then it all went away. But this one's like, we're going to hunt you down almost if you don't do it properly. But yeah. And like I said, the grade description is like, right, are you a B student? So you're worse than a C student. I'm like, well, what does that mean? there's no specifics here. And again, like cutting the content, it works. Obviously, like we can, you know, cut stats, but lots of schools will cut in different ways as well. How many hours of teaching did you have? Are people including some of their content? Are they not? So almost feel like if the exam board said, right, can you guys all just cut these certain topics and just test on these core 10 or 12? We would have had a slightly better time of making assessments then uniformly across all schools. As I said, like we've five different schools, we could do six different things here, and we're all putting the same results forward though.
Yeah.
We could have just had the papers and just cut out the bits that we didn't want to use. I mean, if we could have just done that, that would have just been fine. I'm also concerned about our mocks for next year, because obviously we're now missing papers. So we haven't got secure mocking, well, they're not really secure anyway, are they? But secure to a point, we haven't got mock exams, which is a worry for next year. If there's going to be no November exam window, then what are we going to use? Because they've published all the exams, haven't they? They've published even the 2020 papers as well. So,
yeah,
bit of a worry.
Yeah, and then when they go even when it is released, and then maybe like a private tutor would then just go for a walkthrough on YouTube, like, really. So even like shout out to Tayyab Mahid, he's a hero in doing lots of recorded PowerPoints. Even he was, I think he recorded something for November 2020, but he's decided not to do it at all, because just to ensure that all pupils get a fair access. But in terms of like alternative assessments, I mean, how, you know, could we use sort of like international A-level papers? I think that was something that I think I went to one of the A-level sessions from the Pearson Exam Board, and Pietro Tozzi mentioned about those. Could those be used as
We've used other exam boards papers in the past, and when we did it, because they got so used to the AQA style of things, we gave them an OCR paper and what I thought was a really lovely paper, and the kids hated it, absolutely hated it. It wasn't in the right format or anything else. The wording was slightly different. You know, the emphasis was on different things, and it really threw them. So I think if we were going to be doing that, we would have to be gearing up to that for a while to make them comfortable with the different style of paper.
Just the look at the paper, like when you open it, if you don't like the font looks different, the spacing is a bit, even all of those things just throw you very slightly, like you just know this isn't what I'm familiar with. It just feels a little bit wrong
with AQA, obviously. Yeah, there are others. Multiple choice, isn't it? So
Yeah, they're
each other own slightly different signals and set outs of things, don't they? It's can be off-putting.
Mm. Yeah.
The mat is due to go ahead as normal, isn't it, as well? So we've got to be aware that we've got to fit sequences in as well and anything else that we've missed to make sure that students are fully prepared for that. And when we would usually have, like the AMSP are amazing and they'll do their problem-solving courses, that's all online this year. We used to have students that would go to that physically and meet up with other students and have that interaction, and they've not, the AMSP are doing an amazing job, I'm not knocking that, but they haven't had the preparation that they've had in previous years ready for the MAT and the TAMUA, I don't think, either.
Yeah, and I guess you can't, I mean, for me, I would still be teaching them stuff, and this is still, end of April. And now what I see, what I'm getting from my students is that they are so anxious about performance that, the thing I like doing, which is actually teaching, I can't do anymore because I'm kind of preparing them to the test because they have got something coming up. And there are still gaps in things, and I'd like to make them, mathematical, so to understand these interconnections that you were talking about, Rob, earlier, because I think that's, for me, is an important milestone of finishing after like 13 years of maths to actually become mathematical, to see all these links. And I'm personally just finding that frustrating because these last, some of them just mature so much in those last 2-3 months, right? All that really last few topics, the differential modeling, the equation modeling, it's such an important thing, right? The pandemic modeling, if you understand how differential modeling, etc., works. So it's a really tricky one because you're having to do stuff that basically we teach, right? We teaching is what we want to do. We're not really assessors. We've got a whole system built to do that, and you're suddenly put in this position where you have to assess and design a system.
Are we preparing them for university properly as well? Because the Integral have put out a course last year, which is a free course for preparing students for maths at university, which was really, really good, because it does worry me that they've missed out on so much and that, they're going to start university not at the same place where year 13 students usually would.
I think we've seen that with the year 12 students coming in. I don't know about you guys, but I feel like the year 12s this year are so much weaker than previous cohorts because they didn't have the consolidation period at the end of year 11. They haven't even had that idea of exam stress, really. They kind of, one day got called, there's no more exams and go home now, you're done for year 11. So I feel like that's going to happen again with the year 13s. They're going to go off to university, and whereas they've done one set of public exams 2 years ago, they're going to jump into university life and not understand the lecture system and how to learn as well in general.
I'm finding that, Davina, exactly what you said, because I have some year 12 students who are entering for AS Further Maths now. So we're going through the non-exam assessment process with them. And one thing that they're really finding challenging is just its exam technique. Because, as you said, they just haven't done any high stakes and they haven't had a kind of a run-up to it where they finally learn things, that things finally click, they practice enough that they're confident with things. And I think that the incoming year 12 in September is going to be in a similar situation. And I think school's going to have to work really hard on the transition that they do for students who are coming in September. And then sixth form colleges, I think, are going to have to be quite flexible with what they allow students to do in terms of potentially switching courses if they're not sure what they're doing at the start. It's going to be very, very difficult, I think.
Yeah, assuming communication between secondary schools and sixth form is going to be even more important this year compared to last year, then, because obviously that's a really hard job for sixth form colleges to really kind of see what, even with existing, working in high school year 9 to 13, but even then you've got external candidates coming in, where are they working at? I think communication is absolutely key.
I think it's really difficult when you've got external students because you don't know how they've come up with their grade. And if you're saying, you have to have a level 7 to do A level, where has that level 7 come from? Is their algebra okay? It's almost not too with your own students because you know where they're at, but with students coming in from other schools, you can find that, and we found that this year as well, that they've had really inflated grades and they're not actually coping. And is that ethical? We need to decide pretty quickly whether we allow them to continue doing the course or not. And I said in one of in the MA conference thing that I did, that I'm going to do basically 2 or 3 weeks of GCSE work at the beginning of year 12 and then assess that before I even start with the A level, because the prerequisites need building, otherwise there's no point in starting the A level until you've covered those.
Yeah, and the GCSE grades you're getting is like, these are your best grades on your best day. And there was some students who just, you know, they wouldn't get that in real life because they're not quite there at that ability. So it's like, yes, on your best day, you could get a 7, but on a realistic day, you probably would have got a 6. And then a 6 at A-level suddenly becomes, this is an issue now. Like, that's just not enough knowledge you have. Like, say you have, may not have algebra skills, you may be able to do transformations, but not algebra. There's a difference in that.
Mm. AMSP have just produced a course for transition, haven't they, that's in the process of being rolled out, and the idea of that looks fantastic. It's supported by videos and tutorials and things, and then the students will get a certificate of completion, which is based on how they do in assessments on that course. So it's perhaps different to what we're able to provide as schools and sixth forms in terms of transition, which is very much a here's a load of stuff to do on your own. Mm-hmm. And even if we have ways of monitoring it, I mean, I used to be in charge of transition at my previous school. We used to use MyMaths a lot, so they'd have a MyMaths login, and we'd set them key topics that they had to do, but then you don't know who's doing it, whether they've got tutors, whether they've got people doing it with them or for them. And the support we're able to provide over the summer holiday, obviously, it's not a realistic thing to ask. So I'm really optimistic about this AMSP course that's coming out, and I think we'll look to get our students to do it.
The further maths GCSE materials are quite good as well on integral. I know that what you're saying is like you're just giving them stuff to do, but if students are going for further maths, they tend to be quite motivated, and there's some really good stuff on there with matrices and things as well, and a little bit of calculus that kind of gives them a bit of flavour of what's to come, because I don't know if any of you do further maths GCSE, but we've just pretty much dropped our numbers off, you know, with hardly any students going in for it this year, because we've had to just focus on the GCSE, whereas in the past that's given us students who have been really, really ready for A-level, whereas that's not really happened this year, because we tend to sort of focus on that towards the end of the year, so we haven't had that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got a tutee who was doing further maths GCSE and GCSE, and he will go on to do further maths and A-level maths, but I think the school is so stretched that they can't do the further maths GCSE lessons. There's just so much pressure, which is a real shame, because he needs to be stretched to be kept in that place. And and the other way as well, the A-level's kind of just settling, isn't it, really? I mean, we've only... The GCSE, the new GCSE 9-1 has had more time. It's had that two extra years. So there's more of everything. There's more resources. There's more preparation. People have done it more. But I feel like with the new A-level, they're just not... My tutee's got the same problem. Like, and where do I look up stuff? There's only so few past papers, and only I can tell them, like, from the old stuff, what is relevant and what's not. I mean, kind of like, literally just cutting and pasting stuff from the new, from the old stuff to the new stuff to map it properly.
Edexcel have completely changed their format of their paper, haven't they? So, and how it builds up. So they've only had one paper where they've changed that, following kind of feedback from teachers and students, and the grade boundaries were still extremely low the last time they were done properly. And further maths is even worse, because we've got one less exam period of those two. So it is hard.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, this, we can probably go back to the old system before we had the modular, where we had January and June. That had the linear, but those papers are really, really old and they're completely different specs. So that's again, you have to, yeah. I use Gorkem was the physics and maths tutor.com. Always getting into trouble with Edexcel for using their stuff, but it's a good place to like just find things and copy and paste. But my students don't know how to do that. They don't know what was in the old spec, what's the new spec. They'll have to really like comb through the new spec to see how to map it.
Exam Pro has been a godsend, really, because we've bought into that, and for AQA, that's just setting up assessments and things in Exam Pro has been really, really useful.
And Dr. Fast really useful for it as well, like the auto generator. So you can literally, question one is on this topic, question two is on this topic, change the difficulty, and it just automatically generates questions and like what looks like a mini paper almost. Not the right format, but it's the questions you need in certain topics, and so you can make them more difficult, which is quite nice to transition then for students as well. I floored everyone.
Yeah. Dr. Frost here.
Dr. Frost is just, He led a session as well in the MA conference. I was like, I was absolutely overwhelmed. I was like, wow, man. Since the pandemic hit, it's like literally was just developed that website to such a high level now. It's phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's for remote learning, it was just a godsend for so many schools. Yeah.
What you were saying about mapping the old spec to the new spec, it's made it a real challenge for students to be independent. That's the thing in terms of their own revision. You know, they'll say to you, where can we go to find a past paper that we can just do independently and see how we would have got on? And it's really, really difficult because a website that I direct them to, which I think is fantastic, is Mad As Maths. It has all the papers on there. But even with those, you can't be absolutely sure on the content. And you get students coming into you with a paper they found on there, and they say, "Oh, do we do this, Mr. Southern?" It's like, no, not quite. Or, if it's year 12 students, we haven't done it this year. So it's really, really hard for the students to revise independently.
What we've done is we've downloaded a lot of stuff off Integral and put it on our VLE for them in like little packs and things like that. But there is a very limited amount of stuff out there, and if you're going to do that, you can't use that in your lessons and things like that as well. So and the textbooks are still such varying quality because of how much they rushed it out. They seem to be sort of trying to catch themselves up in correcting them and getting to a point where they're sort of really able to be used. So we sort of invested in textbooks, and we probably need to change all what we're doing because, you know, we wanted them quickly. And I mean, discrete, there's only a few textbooks for decision and discrete and further maths and stuff as well, and so many combinations of things. There's not a lot out there at all.
Yeah, Maths is good because they've got a whole bunch of papers, but and again, it comes down to also from the different boards are stylistically different, on there, like the flavor of the questions, the formatting, people get used to that. Great, we have a few comments coming in. If you're on Twitter or Periscope, just put your thoughts. Miguel Pimentel, have found the same with year 12s this year. The year 12 input. Andrew Parker, the Madness Maths MP1 papers are generally okay for revision. We set one of these each week on our homework. Yeah, this could be a concern for next year's year 12 as well, isn't it? I've had duties in year 12. I think the first year of the international GCSE, the grade boundary for 9 was fairly low, and I had one who got a 9, and the algebra was pretty weak. So they, they were floored by the first few weeks. And A level is just such a huge jump from GCSE. If GCSE is all you've done, not like further additional maths GCSE. That even in normal years, it's quite a big bridge to go, isn't it? I was quite glad when they got rid of that modular system where in January you've got to sit your core one for quite a
while. No, I like that. Mm-hmm. No, I'd rather keep that. Yeah. It gave them a short, sharp shock. Yeah. proper results day, and they realised, I'm not doing quite as well. I need to buck my ideas up. No, I love that. Bring back January.
Yeah. I had it in when I was in year 13, like, you know, you could reset your core ones, core twos in like the January, and it was just an insane amount of stress and pressure that year because you had UCAS and you had these, you know, reset exams because you did badly in the last set. It was a lot. So for me, it's like I hated that January set of exams. It just made it worse. I think I actually did worse than the previous year somehow too. So that wasn't a great thing.
Yeah, not surprised with January. Well, no, sometimes, isn't it? Is it November 6th? No, it's still every June, isn't it? And there's only 1 year sitting. Although, as I'm looking through international papers, I have November, January, and June, and October. And that's absolute madness. But yeah, I mean, January, I think January, I think I'm with Sheen now. I am a fan of the January papers. I mean, I'm going back to when I did it in year 12 and 13 when I did maths and further maths as an A-level as a student. Yeah, because it's actually I suppose an easy cop out to say, you know, if you're not performing well in the C1 paper in January, you get the results in March, and like, look, you've only got this amount of marks. Look, it's not going to look good, you know, if you don't do what get your crack on with revision, because you can't really do that with the limited amount of papers that we have. It's so hard to cover the content, because like the pure paper is effectively like C1, C2, bit of C3, C4, some bits cut out. It's just so hard, isn't it?
We said we had an off-call meeting and we were saying that the content, it's all right saying that we've got this amount of content, but when you add the problem-solving aspect to it, the teaching of that takes a lot longer, and the processing time for students and exams is longer. They weren't balanced very well in terms of timing, particularly to start with. Also, yeah, January exams, as you say, you get more papers and it's secure. So you put kids in for this, they can't get bored of it, and they've had a proper secure paper, and you can get your result, you know, your analysis and stuff through. It would be really useful, I think. Jack Brown did a poll on YouTube asking about module exams and stuff, and there was a lot of support to bring it back.
I think the thing as well, I get the motivation for moving to a core content of A-level, where every student who does an A-level in mathematics has done the same maths. I get that motivation. But in terms of changing the whole system, I mean, to get 180 UMS across Core 3 and Core 4 was hard. And if you did that, fair play, you deserve an A-star. So I'm sitting on the fence, really. I think the students certainly preferred the modular system, and certainly did better in terms of their accuracy on the modular system, because they knew what would be coming up in each paper. Could you argue that under the modular system, students left sixth form college feeling better about maths, feeling more confident about their mathematical ability? Maybe. I don't know. In terms of teaching, I quite like teaching the new content in the fact that there is a bit more problem-solving element to it, and you can make those links across different topics. But I think we've also got a balance, and we were sort of touched upon it earlier about it's the constant conflict we have as A-level teachers, is how far are we trying to turn our students into mathematicians, and how far are we preparing them for an exam that they've got to do, and they have a variety of motivations for wanting to do that exam and achieve that A-level grade. I think that the new A-level is probably destined to always be hard for a decent number of students, and the grade boundaries that we've seen that are very, very low, I can't see that moving, to be honest, and I think that's the way it's going to carry on.
Getting between grades is really hard then, isn't it, though? If it's all squidged like that.
Absolutely.
It was like the old decision maths where you mess up one little bit because it was really harshly marked and you didn't drop two grades. And now they've moved it to further maths.
Yeah.
And taken some of the fun stuff out.
Have the grade boundaries changed that much for decision for further maths?
The decision maths grade boundaries were more realistic than any of the other papers, I think, because students tend to find it a bit easier. So they did look more normal than, you know, the other ones. There's some tricky stuff in there. I mean, group theory, I absolutely love group theory, and I'm glad that that's a bit more prominent. And the simplex method only ever used to be a sort of D2 kind of thing. And yeah, it's fun. But they've taken some of the sorting algorithms and some of the other bits out that I quite like. Not linear programming. The like programming aspect of it has gone, which is, I find, a real shame.
Oh. Yeah, I liked the matching algorithm. That was a nice one. That felt like it had a real sort of practical application. I always enjoyed teaching decision.
I like it too. Yeah. Well, I didn't further maths. Oh well. I like teaching decision in AS maths, A level maths.
Yeah. I taught a lot of students who did computer science, and I'm not a programmer. I don't know anything about programming or anything like that. But it was really interesting because they would say to me, "Oh, we do in computer science, we do this, and this is very much like what you're teaching us in D1." So it's actually a really nice experience for me to kind of feel like I was learning with them as much as sort of telling them things. It was really good.
You want some nice brain melting, not logic questions. Some of the Tamua questions are really, really fun to have a go at.
Okay.
Then the fun for the students as well. And if you've got any sort of doing the BMAT and stuff like that, those questions are really interesting.
Okay.
Do you find the new A-levels also good for those STEP and MAP kind of ideas, like the problem-solving elements and extending their knowledge? I find, the old A-level, our students really found it difficult to get their head around STEP and stuff because it was just too much. Whereas the new one, I think, prepares them better, especially the further math students. Like, they feel less of a shock, I think, when they see them. They can do like a little bit more than previous years.
They link in as well a lot better. You can actually, like, some of the integral kind of level three questions and stuff like that, I've got some step questions thrown in. You can actually use them in your lessons, mm-hmm. step one questions and stuff. Yeah. It's a shame that step one has gone, actually. I was quite sad.
Yeah.
It was like the nice one for students. It was like the easy win. And then step two was like, okay, we're going to get real now.
Step one was one that I could just kind of pick up and go with. I could, yeah. I'm doing those ones. It didn't really hurt my head too much.
Yeah. Okay, we've got some questions coming in. It's very linked to what we're talking about anyway. Miguel Pimentel, are you thinking of starting year 12 any differently next year, followed by, in terms of inconsistent prior knowledge due to the range of year 11 assessments?
Well, I wanted to kind of ask everyone else here, really, what they do or are planning on doing in terms of intervention for year 12 students. Who maybe just need a little bit extra to nudge them up to where they need to be?
Oh, good question. Okay, so I'll start then. I mean, for us, I think the number one issue, and I think it's probably across all schools, is just hours, just time available. I mean, for me, this half term, my time just changed completely, actually, since Easter, because. No, we've had year nines, changing things to options. So we had our timetables change. It's been ironically, I have less hours to teach A level than I did before. But I think fortunately for us, where I'm at, we have 9 hours per fortnight for A level maths for year 12 and year 13. Hopefully we'll be able to do maths and further maths for next year, further maths for the first time ever, I think, for a new spec. I think first in terms of intervention, so for coming year 12s, so it's me and another colleague of mine who works part-time. My part-time colleague does a lot of sort of one-to-one kind of interventions, or because she works flexible hours, so she'll do like a sort of one-on-one kind of tuition with or one-to-two, one-to-three with them. And I'm more of a sort of find me when I'm free, just come and find me. I'm always around, if I'm happen to be there, you can ask me a question. So you kind of tend to book an appointment to see me. Sort of like office hours, like at university have your office hours, so it's kind of like that. But I think for, and if I extend to year 11, so going to year 12, I have a current year 11 top set group, and I mean a lot of what I said is pretty much, look, we're actually doing A-level maths, we're doing A-level maths now, just in GCSE standards. So for them it's like, oh, I'm just prepping them, getting them to get to that A-level mindset early. In year 11 or even down to year 10, so look, you are actually doing A-level maths, and actually they feel more confident they seem to be working harder. Year 11 transition, year 11 to 12, I'm planning to do two sort of transition sessions in just after they finish their assessments, after wits and half term, just sort of kind of introduce, and then we'll give them like a book, like a transition book for them to work at, but they can find us whenever we're available. But yeah, sorry if I seem to diverge into about three questions into one.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like we're pretty much the same as well, like thinking about like transition tests. And also I've started doing something new for my current year 12s and actually giving them a mark for the clarity of their answers. So yes, you've got the answer, but is it, you know, is it clear? Is it detailed and descriptive? All those things where they think they're not important. So I literally put another 5 marks on the paper saying, right, is it clear what you were trying to get across the whole way? And I think, especially for the year 11s, that's going to be important, like setting their work out properly, especially as further mathematicians who want to go on to do maths as well at university. But like the transition booklets, the transition tests, recapping like some of the material before you even start A-level, I think all comes in part with the new year 12s coming in.
Yeah, I'm guessing you... one topic I think almost everyone's chopped out is constructions. Like, it's like no one... we don't need construction at A-level. Out.
Just ditch it all together. And in GCSE... Loci can go with it as well. Both of those, they can go.
Well, I like loci. It's like problem solving. Come on, please.
But there's compasses involved and equipment and, oh, no. No, that
to be fair, I do enjoy putting the compass back in the box once we start teaching A-level. That's,
yeah.
Dyspraxic person, it's not always been my friend, the compass.
Okay. Oh,
sorry.
The cat. Yeah, no, not a fan of constructions either. They could go, definitely.
It's just very difficult to have been taught it in this situation remotely anyway, so it makes sense it's the first. I asked all my GCSE students, are you going to be tested for constructions? Oh, no, we haven't had any questions come up for constructions. So it's there's a few things for like the foundation ones, the exact trig values. I mean, it's just really...
I don't know why that's in foundation. Oh. Like, it just can get in the bin. Why do they put that in there? It's a memory test at that point. I don't understand why or what they need it for. They're never going to use it, like...
I don't know why they have it at all when they... I suppose there's the non-calculator paper at GCSE, isn't there? But as soon as you get to A-level, you're now allowed a calculator at all times.
I still like the exact trick. I like the triangles and I like... Because you can... There's applications there for other things. I do think they need to stay, but not at foundation GCSE.
Yeah.
It's always a wonderful moment, isn't it? The look on a student's face when you tell them that the mat is non-calculator. Yeah, the absolute horror. Like, no, you have to know those exact trig values for your map. You know, they kind of expect that if you're going to apply to. You know,
I mean, I see my year 12s doing like one plus something else.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the other one, isn't it? The A-level students always ask you, like, do we get given the volume of a cylinder in the formula book at A-level? It's like, well, you weren't at GCSE, so no. You know.
Bring back core one, no calculator, make them think. There's so many things that they can test it. Like, I really think that there should still be a no calculator element at A-level a little bit.
I agree. I think also for things like efficiency of calculations and things like that. Well, like when you're doing those integration questions in core one, where you're finding the equation of the curve given a point, and you've got to manipulate those surds, and it's just about, can you get your expression or your equation for y in a form where it's easy to substitute those values in, and then can you manipulate them? I think that's actually a really important mathematical skill.
Lost a lot of that, and we've been watching, I don't know if you know Tom Rock's maths, and he's done some he's done some papers and he's filmed himself doing some papers, and he very, very rarely uses a calculator until he actually needs to. And it's interesting that there are a lot of those skills that we seem to, you know, be missing now, because the calculator does so much. And another thing that came out of the off-core meeting that we had was that obviously a lot of students get a massive advantage if they've got a graphical calculator, and the example is probably need to try and mitigate that a little bit, because students don't all have access to a graphical calculator, and it's not fair if you've got like an extra 10 or 12 marks because you can plot the graph really easily. That's a grade, because the grade boundaries are so narrow, it's not fair.
Hmm. Yeah, I missed the probability tables, actually. The normal distribution, you could teach, because you can see the table, you can see the values, you can see how, with the calculator, it's all just input, output. And if you don't know what you're doing and you can't like visualize a normal distribution.
Yeah, you need it to the right and you need to do one minus that. You don't need to do that anymore, do you? Just have it in.
I still teach my year 12s to use the table if they can. And I say, well, back in the old days of when I did A-level maths, this is what we got to use. And they, it's for them, you know, I said, sometimes, you know, You know, so you use the booklet as a check-in tool, or use the calculator check-in tool, you know, because, you know, why not? You know, it's there in the formula booklet. Why is it, you know, if we're saying that, we're, you know, why is it in the formula booklet? You know, because the tables are still there for binomial and normal. So might as well use it. Otherwise, it's going to go completely, wouldn't it?
For us, it's like this generation's log tables, isn't it? It's suddenly overnight kind of potentially become obsolete.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever used log tables.
No, I haven't seen
them either.
But the slightly older people in the department are like, oh, we used to have log tables for this. And, oh, is that right? Okay.
There were trig tables before that as well, I think.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing with the stats and the calculators is they've actually made some of the specification obsolete as well. I mean, if you think about normal, using the normal as an approximation to the binomial, because, you know, your binomial tables went up to n equals 50. Yeah. But your calculator will just do it now, you know, and it seems really contrived that you're teaching them how to use the approximation, and then the calculator will just tell them the actual answer, because it can handle n being a bigger number. It does seem strange.
They're trying to shoehorn unknowns and things in there so that students actually have to show some manipulation, or you show that questions, don't they? But it's, yeah. And it's also getting students to realise that, you know, that they're expecting you to do the quadratic formula on your calculator. They're expecting you to do an integration on your calculator. It's only one mark. You're not supposed to be writing all this extra stuff down. Because as teachers, I think we cling on to that, like, show you're working out, show this, show that. And actually, the exam board are expecting them to use their calculator efficiently. Yeah. And we've had to change our teaching to kind of let go of some of it, which I didn't like.
I quite agree. My year 12s had an assessment recently where the first question was a simultaneous equation, ultimately after some manipulation, and they virtually all did it by hand. And I was slightly upset the sort of time cost. It's clearly, you know, it's, some of the later questions were clearly a little bit rushed because they were supposed to do them on the calc.
The sign errors that they get into along the way, don't they? Make so many mistakes when they're messing about with stuff like that, when they don't need to.
But personally, I found it quite a difficult thing to bring into my teaching, actually, is to explicitly train them in what the calculators can do and how to use them efficiently. I think that's actually something, since the new A-levels come in, that I personally need to improve on. Because it personally wouldn't have occurred to me that you have a pair of simultaneous equations and you just stick it in the class with, but actually that's what we should be teaching them to do.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, so one of the first few lessons I did in year 12 was actually like, this is everything our calculator can do. So going through like random, lots of different random questions, saying we can put this in, we can solve these equations, we don't need to show working out, and that kind of help them remember that it does all these functions then. And then it had like a speed test, like, can you answer like 20 simultaneous equations in 5 minutes using the calculator, just to make them remember they can use it.
That's such a good idea.
It's when you we have quite a lag for ours to actually upgrade and buy the A level one as a sixth form centre. So they all come in with they used to come in with the old 85 GTX.
Oh yeah.
Sorry about that. You've got to persuade them, we need this one, really. The big selling point that we've been plugging is the stats stuff, which you don't get onto for months and months and months. They sort of sit there with their 85 GTXs, not able to solve the simultaneous equations as quickly as it's a little bit frustrating.
Encourage our top set year 11s and stuff to get the class quiz when they're in year 11, because they can take that into the GCSE exam, and the sooner they get confident with that, the better. And if they don't go on to do it, and they don't want to keep it, they can sell it on to another student. It's not like they're going to lose out on the money or anything. So.
Yeah. No.
Just about to say the same. Look, I bought my graphical calculator, the Casio one now, on Marketplace for £25 because someone was getting rid of it. And I was like, I am definitely buying that. Every so often, they're like £30, £40. They're like, that's a massive discount. Probably, you know, A-level kids used it for about 3 months when we don't need it anymore. Just parents are getting rid of it because it's expensive. It's quite a good place to get fairly cheap ones.
I do regularly threaten to throw mine out of the window. It is the clunkiest, most unuser friendly piece of equipment I've ever come across in my life. I hate it.
I have to say that as well. Like, it's just, you know, there's just things on there, like the buttons, the F1 to F6, like, these aren't just not user friendly.
Yeah.
Shift 4.
I'm just trying to do something really straightforward. It's just got like
shift 4.
Buttons. I hope Cassio are listening to this. Can you take a look at this? Make your calculator use a software upgrade or something.
What's that like? A lot of schools don't, like teachers don't know how to use graphical calculators as well. Like some of the less experienced, like further maths and A-level maths teachers. Yeah. And even the invigilators don't really understand what it means when we like need to put it in exam mode. So it's almost like, I feel like invigilators need a bit of training. Like, here's the calculator. Here's how you put into exam mode.
This yeah, is what you need should... to put that into exam mode. I think that's only for international stuff because it restricts some of the vector stuff. I don't think they have to put it into exam mode, which I'm sure somebody will probably correct me, but I'm pretty sure you don't.
Okay.
You don't.
No, you're right. You've just got to clear the memory, and I think they have to put it in exam mode if they're going to use it for a science exam because it's got periodic table function on it that they're not allowed. But yeah, for maths you're fine just to clear the memory.
Miguel Pimentel has some more follow-ups on the year 12. Have you found yourselves behind with the year 12 content because of them being weaker? If so, have you made any amendments to the future year 13 teaching order content as a result?
I think we've had some students who've done less than they should have done during lockdown and are now finding things quite tricky. So once year 11 and year 13 go, we will be looking at kind of interventions and stuff like that. But in terms of getting through the content, I don't think we're massively far behind because this time around we did live online lessons for all of the lockdown. So, you know, in terms of teaching the content, we kept up. It's the understanding that I would be concerned about, and it's mainly mechanics that we've taught sort of since January. So I would definitely be doing quite a substantial recap on year 12 mechanics before I launch in 13 next year.
I did an assessment with my year 12s fairly soon after they returned to school and very quickly regretted trying to teach connected particles over the internet. That was quite an error.
Yeah. You've got a nice, got the videos on your YouTube channel as well. I've seen quite a few of those, yeah. So.
Oh, thank you. You managed to find a really, quite a flattering picture of me to put on the flyer for this, actually. Much more so than the YouTube manages with the thumbnails. Those honestly, it's ridiculous, some of them. They're just, I'm just in all these contorted positions. I think, okay, well, at some point when I'm teaching, I look like that. That's embarrassing.
It's not as bad as the MA one. When I was doing my thing for the MA, they got a really awful picture of me and then tweeted it. So yeah,
it was gosh, that screenshot.
I did that. I want to have words.
Their screenshots were hilarious. I mean, it's like just completely random, or some of the worst, like mid pose, you know.
Yeah. It's like pausing a TV show, isn't it? Something you find yourself doing.
Mm. Well, you're like about to pause there, so I was literally just stuck there, frozen screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
thought it was going to be all right, obviously not.
Yeah. I think, we carried on with year 12 online teaching, yeah, during the any more of those lockdowns, yeah, we carried on. So I teach stats and pure, and my colleague teaches pure and mechanics. So yeah, we carried on, but yeah, in terms of, I think like Sheena said, I think once the LM 13 are, once they finish, we would need to switch year 12 to give them some actions and intervention. But yeah, from terms of where we are, I think we managed to finish stats year 12 on Monday, just on the Monday. Almost finishing year 12 pure, but yeah, I've been assigned to do exponentials and logs to then launch year 13 stats with exponential models.
Nice.
So beautiful.
Something
like more starters and things like that, which I spend more time than I planned to. I'm like, oh, it's a quick 5 minute starter on a topic we did over lockdown, and then 15 minutes later I'm like, why do you not know this? We've done this.
Mathbox is really good for that. Just
yeah.
In the odd question, the little skills checks and stuff that I've used them all the time are really good.
Yeah, something I'm hoping to introduce, because I've started work at my current school in September, so I've not been there that long. But what I've used in previous schools is weekly revision sheets, that kind of cover a variety of topics that they've done from earlier on in the course. And then what would happen when they get into year 13 is they'd have a section A and a section B. And the section A would be year 12 stuff, and then the section B would be the year 13 stuff. And then teachers can kind of make tactical decisions about whether or not to explicitly set section A and say you must do this, maybe to make it optional, or just if they've got a group that's absolutely fine, just say no, it's okay, just focus on section B and here's some other stuff. That's something I'm going to try and bring
in. Really nice, like, really, really nice idea, that especially like if you weekly homework or weekly class, like you say, it just keeps them in the loop of not forgetting anything.
And I think it makes revision much less scary for them, because I mean I've not done it this year, and my current year 12 class are, you know, building up to an end of year 12 exam after half term, and they're really daunted by the prospect of revision, because what they've done sort of weekly for their homeworks is just, this is what we're doing. And then you get kind of, you know, intermediate tests that are just on the last sort of two or three topics, and they think, okay, they cram that revision, they do okay, and then suddenly you're looking at a, you know, 14 chapter textbook and going, oh well, crikey, actually
overwhelming.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Whereas if they're just doing it continually,
interleaving.
Yeah,
that reminds me about Sandra's maths box, isn't it? Because she's got a lot of weekly tech checkups, or test A, test B, test C. Absolutely cheap package. You haven't got maths box. You really need to buy yourself a package. You know, get a personal one. You know,
is that for A level? Yeah.
It's GCSE and A level. It goes from year 7. It's actually got some primary school stuff on there. Like, it is just amazing. For the money as well, it's incredible. Yeah. And she's adding to it all the time. I can't big it up enough. You just say, oh, could you do this? Could you do that? And she'll be like, yeah, I've sorted it out somewhere. Yeah. Calculator skills for year 7, 8 and 9. Is what she's doing at the moment. It's brilliant.
You guys got shares in it or something?
No, it's just so cheap. It's so cheap. It's so great. Yeah.
I want a mug with it on.
I'm very cheeky, I'm sorry.
I would do fantastic stuff. I'm not promoting just maths, aren't I? Should get shares on that, shouldn't I? Somewhere with them.
Yeah, I've been
Not with the company, of course. But with colleagues.
For GCSE, there's a Corbett Maths 5 a day. And if there was something like, I had to design one for one of my tutees, like a 5 a day. And it was a very painful process of gathering like 5 different questions a day, and with the modules as well. But if there is something like out there, yeah, I'd sign up to that straight away. If that's basically, is it?
It's really, really good.
Yeah, Corbett's got Core, like the old Core one. That's still really good. And for the further maths one's brilliant, isn't it? The further maths 5 a days. Maybe we should try and persuade Corbett to do the A level version. He's done primary. He's done secondary. He's done further maths. Go on, John. So you can do one book, another version for A level pure mechanics, stats, and further maths, please.
It's not a lot.
A lot, Katie, please.
Yeah. Okay. I'll have a look at Periscope. It's gone quiet. It's a bit late. We'll try to start wrapping up now. Is there any kind of last thoughts? Anything you want to talk about?
Well, I was going to, hopefully my connection will be stable enough. I was wanting to talk about my two year 12 classes. So there's one that's bang on, and then the other one is about 2 weeks behind. There's some students then there who are a little more anxious than in the other group. So I've gone over things slowly, just to kind of keep them happily on top of what we're doing. And I don't know whether that's going to bite me later on with some of the assessments that we're doing. But I feel more confident with them as well, oddly, that we have taken the time to go into detail on things with that class. But it's always interesting if you've got two classes that you're trying to teach in parallel.
I've got two. I teach in parallel, and it is difficult because one of their lessons, we have split lunches, and one of them has nearly all of their lessons on that lunch break. So you have them for half an hour, then they have half an hour lunch, and then they come back for the other half an hour, and they are more behind, and it's because of that, which is really frustrating. But I think I think you've got to do what's best for your class at the end of the day. If that has worked, there's no point in rushing anything, because if they've not built stuff on solid foundations, that, you know, even if you don't quite get through all of it, the stuff they've done will be really secure. And I think that's far more important than rushing through and getting the content done. And I think that's a mistake a lot of us are guilty of doing at times, like, you know, trying to get through everything, because there's so much to do, that actually taking the time is much more worthwhile.
That's the thing, isn't it? I mean, I talked about that quite a lot when I did a maths conf talk on teaching A-level for understanding, and I talked about going slower to go faster. And, you know, you just got to, if you embed those things early, then the things that come later on, they don't take as long to teach, because you're not having to kind of go off and kind of reteach the, I don't know, so say you're teaching integration by substitution for or something like that with trig identities. If they've got those trig identities embedded solidly so they can spot them forwards and backwards and use them, you're not kind of going off on a sideshow while trying to teach integration by substitution to go, oh, should we just recap these trig identities that you haven't really got the first time around? You just, you've just got to be brave and spend the time you need, I think.
Yeah. I definitely have done that.
Yeah, and do we have any information at all, maybe what will happen next year? Maybe it certainly can't be expected to be for it to be a normal type of year with a normal type of assessment. Maybe it'd be some kind of reduced content of it, but is there any
doing that, they need to tell us now.
Can I only agree with
that? It'd be their first proper assessment since year six, wouldn't it? 7 years.
Don't say that. Blimey.
Yeah, and when they get to university, first year, that'd be their first time they test on everything they've learned in a year. Like, it's a massive pressure for them as well. Like, it's going to university, probably somewhere, you know, they really want to go, hopefully, and then suddenly it's like, I can't cope with exams, or I can't cope with learning everything, and there's no reduction. Why am I, I'm a COVID kid. Things like that.
Yeah. I'm going to be putting my kids in for AS level in November, if that's an option, because I was going to put them in for AS now, and obviously that's been cancelled. I think it's just important to give them some exam practice, really, to get some data.
What would people think about if they maybe went down the route of some of the more literary subjects like English and history, where you maybe have optional questions, or, you know, to kind of facilitate different schools perhaps having taught different content?
It's kind of like the, it's like how I, the IB papers, isn't it? IB's got like options, sort of like that.
There's five questions, answer three of them or whatever.
Yeah, answer three of five, or gosh, or going back to the old, to 1970s, 80s A-level. Man, that's going back.
Step papers they get to choose, don't they? And I think it's quite a good skill for them to actually be able to look at something and decide what ones they go for.
Yeah, and the way they mark it as well, you get your best five, don't you, or your best, however many, it's six, is it? Five or six?
I think it's six, and you choose, is it six, choose three.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same, it's, and also it gives them, it actually, having given them a choice, or even probably have half of it to be a compulsory element, but then the other half choose how many out of how many, because it reminds me back to university. When I did maths at university, it was literally a compulsory element and then your choice element. I think that's a good, that could be a good thing.
Good for practicing as well. Like when you're practicing, you know, papers and there's choices, you're like, right, I need to make some problem solving stuff in my head here, and to figure out which is the best choice. And also you'll make mistakes when you're practicing anyway, and then you realize, okay, right, this is not what I do something else instead. You just learn more from it, I think.
I mean, to be honest, it's something you have to train a lot of further mathematicians to do anyway, because if they're not used to, if they're not used to being under time pressure, if they're not used to, you know, being anything less than 100% accurate, explaining to them things like indecision, you know, if you're trying to find a route around a network, those two marks are not worth 15 minutes of your time. Sacrifice them, do something else.
So it's those long ones that are like, one mark is like five. It's like, it's not worth you reading that question. You come back to that if you've got time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I get that with the foundation GCSE
students. Some of the multiple choice on AP as well, 1 mark. Too much reading for 1 mark, too much calculation for 1 mark. And some of the EdXL questions were so wordy as well. Just the act of reading them and trying to comprehend what it's asking you to do was not taken into account as the mark allocation. I think that's, yeah, exam technique again, isn't it, that they've not had much practice of.
Yeah. I call them the cheap marks and the expensive marks. Those are the expensive marks. Okay, great. Well, I did promise we won't go too long. It is a Thursday evening after all. So I'd like to do actually talk about maths and further in the next A-level ones, where we can discuss things like pedagogy and more about things like we like teaching and learn from each other's teaching techniques. So this was just a one-off because of just the imminence of assessment is not the favorite thing for all of us. It's not the thing we like teaching. So hopefully, we'll have another one once this assessment stuff's out of the way, or where we can just look at actual maths. And for me, one of the exciting things is that all of us have had some experience of using screens to teach. So the way I tried live streaming like 2 to 3 years ago, and it didn't work because no one was used to this kind of technology. But now we can share stuff on screen. We did one with Pete Mattock on manipulatives, where we just did a screen share of the MathSpot site, and we actually just looked at how he uses certain manipulatives or virtual manipulatives. So that's the kind of thing I'd like to do. If you're familiar with whiteboards, we could use a screen share of a whiteboard, whatever, or a visualizer, or whatever you use already in the classroom or remotely. So fantastic. So if you're listening in on a recording of it, do keep the questions coming, and I'm gonna wrap it up here, and then we'll just have a quick 5 minutes and we can finish up there. So let's do a very quick wave to everyone, so to say thank you for everyone tuning in, and I'll hit the stop streaming there.